The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
It is March 13th, 2023. This is Atlanta United FC Weekly, a Home Before Dark podcast. What do you got, Dan? Ooh, is that the
it's the watermelon LaCroix. It's the worst.
And by watermelon, by watermelon LaCroix, you mean cucumber LaCroix.
Yeah.
It tastes
with a little
just
bit
like
of fish.
Cucumber. Oh, no, don't say that. You're going to ruin it for me. Did you get the pack from Costco? Is that why you have it?
That's why I have it.
Same here. I have the limoncello in front of me. That's I finally converted Kevin. Hey, He actually likes the limoncello now, and it's kind of satisfying.
Well, that's just how Kevin rolls. He hates something until he actually tries it, and he's like, "Oh, this is good," and then he's like, "Yeah, I really like this." Like you with LaCroix, me with Peloton.
Oh, Dan, I have 20 years of that other examples I could bring up. Anyway, right, I am Tim Herb. As always, I'm joined by my lovely co-host, Mr. Dan James. If you're watching on YouTube, he is over to my right, or over to your right, over to my left. I don't know. This is really disorienting whenever you try and point in the direction of somebody in a remote call. Anyway, thank you guys for tuning in on this lovely Monday evening. It's back to being cold in Atlanta. It's really quite strange. I'm sure everybody's doing well with the pollen. Is it COVID? Is it not COVID? Did I get to catch RSV or something like that? Or maybe it's just pollen. I don't know. Maybe it's just pollen. I don't know. Anyway, thank you guys. As you can tell, Kevin Bradley is not with us tonight. He is traveling on business. So he's somehow left the keys up to us and he's okay with it. And, cheers to him, I guess. And cheers to all the folks in the trap. We got Richard Gordon, Nathan Explosion, Bradley D claiming to be Kevin's burner account, checking in. Maybe that is Kevin. Maybe Bradley D is Kevin. And it's always been a joke that I've never gotten, or I've always thought it was a joke and maybe it's not a joke. Anyway, Elliot Beaven, Brittany S, Patrick Delaney, Eric Quintana, who is fresh off of winning awards at the podcast awards. I already forgot the name. What's the podcast awards show? I'm terrible.
Is there a podcast award show?
yeah. They won for Up and Vanished. Eric won an award for production on Up and Vanished on Tenderfoot Media.
Good job, Eric. Actually producing a decent podcast. Well done.
Yeah. Your work at Tenderfoot has been fantastic. It makes for great road trip listening.
I will have to check that out. I have been not aware, so I will subscribe and download all of them.
Yeah, Michelle, we have Michelle in the trap as well. Cool. How's everybody doing tonight? Eric brings up something that I think is pretty crazy, but not really. I think it's, I don't know. I didn't expect it to really happen, but Joseph, three matches in, started all three. He's played like 230-something minutes without a goal for Inter Miami. Inter Miami, who I believe are on 6 points, if I'm not mistaken. So I guess they're doing okay without his scoring prowess.
They're doing okay. I mean, they lost last week 1-0 to NYCFC. And I think that was on the PlaySchool stadium, the PlaySchool match pitch that they play on up there.
Oh, NYCFC. In
Yankee Stadium. Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's kind of gross up there. Elliot Beaven, with the correct sentiment, it's going to be an invincible season. And not like your Arsenal invincible season. We're not drawing 27 times. We are going to win some matches, and we're going to do it in an exciting fashion.
Absolutely. I think we play LAFC once. That'll be our one test, right?
Yeah. We got a clean sheet, Dan.
I know. When was the last time we had one of those?
I don't know. I don't have the schedule from last year in front of me, but it feels pretty good.
Great.
It feels great. Yeah. How are you feeling coming off of that match? Like Saturday, I don't know if you watched live, but I would love to get your thoughts on what you saw.
Oh, yeah, man. No, we did watch it live. Me and my son watched it live. He was wearing his Caleb Oiley jersey and going nuts with Caleb banging in the goals and getting an assist. It was great. Fantastic. I haven't seen a better performance than that in a long time. But the other hand is, like, Charlotte are terrible. They are terrible. But it was good. Like, we just wiped the floor with them, really. And then I was a little bit disappointed in the second half that we kind of sat back a little bit, but because I wanted to just go for the jugular and get a good 6-0 whipping in, but we decided not to do that. So, yep.
Yeah, I guess you can. I'm going to try not to be that guy that is like, just, I'm just going to be that guy. It makes it was Charlotte sentiment that I kept seeing really drives me insane. Because to Patrick Delaney's point, it says good teams handle bad teams and put them away, and we did that. It feels good. And I couldn't say it better. You win the games you have to, or you're supposed to win. And that was a game we were supposed to win, and we won it handily. We went up early. We kind of coasted, I would say, in the second half a little bit. But also, yeah. I would say Charlotte tightened up a little bit in the second half. I feel like they were, as you could see with their defense, their defending in the beginning was kind of baffling. But I felt like they kind of tightened up in the second half, and as you're probably want to do when you're down 3-0. They were unfortunate, I think, to have, and we could talk about the penalty, not penalty thing, but I thought that was kind of unfortunate for them that got called back because of the way that it transpired. I felt for them a little bit, but man, it felt good. It felt really good. I wanted to get, you know, your thoughts on that first goal. Like I was saying, the defending was a little bit baffling, but at the same time, I thought that when you have what do we call him, a gravity well in Thiago Almada?
Yeah.
When he's able to get, we did a really good job in the beginning, I would say, even in the first half, of turning them over consistently and pressing them. I think Sadic was pretty key in that. I thought that Almada did a good job in capitalizing with that first goal, where he was able to, off of a turnover with their defense kind of off kilter, be able to pull defenders up towards Barry, and Barry makes that run, and Barry's kind of got wide open space, and, you know, more defenders commit that way, and you have Caleb Wiley just running into open space in the middle. Again, what we talked about, him and Gutman over the past few weeks kind of shifting centrally at times to give defenses kind of a fit, and you have a kid with that much pace and that much open space with Thiago Almada on the ball. All you need is the finish at the end of it, because you know that ball is going to be put into perfect space for him, and he put it away.
Yeah, and I keep getting Caleb's goals mixed up, but the first one was where he actually ran onto the ball and had to put a little bit of effort into it, right? Where Almada jumped over it and he finished it?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, you're right, and you're right. The first goal was... I remember watching back the straight on angle, or no, maybe the live angle didn't seem as tight of an angle, or the camera angle, whenever they showed the goal live, it didn't seem as tight as whenever you saw it in real time. You're like, oh, he actually had to put a good bit of like composure. Like he had to put that into
he had to beat the keeper. Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm struggling with
second
words
one.
Right
it
now.
Was
my
like
placement.
So the first one he had to like put in some effort and actually put a lot of power behind the shot to beat the keeper. But in his second one, he was able to slot it into the bottom corner. But I loved the goals because they were team efforts. Not that I don't love a banger that Almada almost got in the second half, but
very close.
The fact that Almada seems to be getting incredibly tight with these guys, like he was the first one to go over and congratulate Caleb on his first goal and allowing, like he probably has the skill to have, instead of jumped over it, put it away, but he had the awareness to allow the ball to play on because he knew Wiley was right there and Wiley could put it right in. But I was like, just so gooey over the fact that Almada and Wiley were playing so well together. It was really good to see, and it makes me really hopeful of the future. It makes me think that I've said this before. I worry that Almada is going to be the girlfriend who was obviously way too good for you, and has obviously gone on to better things. But this makes me think like he's here to stay for just a little while, and while he stays, he's going to make it really fun for you. So obviously I wanted him to finish out the season, but it was just a fantastic effort all around.
Yeah, no, I would agree wholeheartedly. And I think that dummy, if you want to call it a dummy, that Almada plays on Wiley's second goal is, I think to your point, I think the chemistry in everything that they're building is showing through there. But also, it sounds cliche, but I think that that's what makes him a great player. Because as a playmaker like that, as your number 10, yeah, I don't know, he doesn't wear number 10, but he's our playmaker. But you have to have faith in your attack. And I think as you have faith in your attack and you're giving them and your whatever, faith in your teammates, regardless, that you're giving them the option and the position and you're giving them those balls, that breeds confidence in those players. It also, helps that chemistry. I thought it was another fantastic performance from Thiago Almada. I do worry that he's going to be gone in the summer, but we got to live in the moment and really just, yeah, enjoy him while he's here. I think that's what we got to do. And to your point, yeah,
absolutely.
So it's, yeah.
Because if he does go, what are you going to do? I don't know, but let's not worry about that right now.
Yeah. I text Kevin this during the game. So I thought Araújo had, especially in the first half in his goal, I thought that he played pretty well. I thought he played, I was very happy with the way that our attack was playing. Even Barry, from week to week, I see a level of comfort in him in being able to play with that, play with the other three in the front four. And I think as he transitions onto the bench, that's going to be very valuable because you're changing positions with those guys, right? Between him and right. Giakoumakis, where they're both getting comfortability. Giakoumakis in the second half getting, fitness and getting some chemistry with the team, but also Barry doing the same as he's going back into more of a substitution role where you have him comfortable coming off of the bench late games, either to play alongside Giakoumakis if we're chasing a game or to trying to put it away and, Kubo Torres style or something like that. You have fresh legs and a guy who can hold the ball up. But everybody from that standpoint, I thought played well. The one thing I would say that is still, kind of hard to judge is I do feel like Araújo is still relatively selfish on the ball. He's like the opposite of Almada. And I don't know that's something that you need from your winger. I think that your number nine needs to be the selfish player if you're going to have one at the front of the field. And maybe that's going to change as Giakoumakis gets folded. And I don't know if you have any thoughts on that or if you noticed any sort of like selfishness from Araújo.
I mean, I didn't see him as selfish as I feel like in past games. I mean, he had that one in the second half where he was running into the box and just seemed incredibly indecisive. And then I think he just kicked it right at the keeper in the end. But and he had, I think, Etienne.
Is that the one where he had Giakoumakis? Did he have Giakoumakis trailing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he had Yako open as well. But the thing is, what makes me hopeful is because the connection with Wiley and Almada seems to be good, that there's a foundation there that, hey, we can all coalesce together. And I think when this front four really gets in the same vein and has had like a number of matches together where they've started and gone through at least 75 minutes a match together, I feel like he's going to come good. But it's just got to have that consistency together, and he'll get it. He's got the talent to get it. He's been through, I feel like, what has he been with us for, like a season and a half prior to this season? So
yeah,
never had a good outlet together where he can be an equal on the front line, because Joseph was always the big personality there. So I'm hopeful. I'm going to give it a good number of games, but if he's still just not producing, then you're going to have to figure something else out.
I mean, we say that and he had a goal. I'm just saying, like, exactly, it definitely, to your point, it has gotten better game over game. I still feel like, and maybe again, it's as, and we've talked about this, as you fold in a more established striker for him to play off of, or if he gets a comfort level with Etienne or with Wiley, that you're going to see less of that. Go to the trap real quick. Anthony Neitzel, we could kind of shift to another player that seems to be standing out in a lot of people's eyes. He said, I've got to give Ibarra a lot of credit. He has more than exceeded expectations these first three games. I think it was everybody's favorite, every Atlanta United fan's favorite pundit that was doing color commentary for the game, Taylor Twellman, when he was talking, you know, kind of halfway through the game, that talking about Ibarra playing an out-and-out destroyer kind of set center defense mid. And to me, I think that's his position.
Yeah, I feel like that's when he first came in, he was introduced as that's his role. Like, that's his personality type. What I loved, in addition to everything he's been doing that I haven't seen in the past few games, is his shithousery with, like, winding up Westwood. I mean, he really got him good, but it was fantastic. That's exactly the personality that we've needed in the midfield. Someone who can Dom Dwyer it. And as a kid so young, who is already learning that, and it's fantastic. That's exactly what we want in our U22s. Joe Johnstone, Carmona 3.0. Absolutely. But he's like 10 years younger than Carmona.
And I feel like a foot taller and like 40 pounds heavier than Carmona was. Yeah. Ibarra is a big boy. Like, he makes me, like, I'm very excited about this midfield with him kind of anchoring that back right in front of the two center backs. I think he's been outstanding the entire way, or, you know, all three matches of the season so far. And if it weren't for a deflection, he may have been a goal scorer on Saturday too. That rip that he had.
Yeah.
Was on frame. Yes. That was on frame, if nothing else. Yeah.
It would have been a Tito Vialba-esque goal if that had gone in.
Go ahead, Dan.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I mean, what a turnaround for the kid. I mean, everyone was talking about prior to the season starting, they want to see Ibarra gone. I mean, it's a bad contract now. We're paying too much for him. But this is the guy right now, in my eyes, that I see being more of a much needed cog in the midfield. Like, I would always start Ibarra and then switch out either Hasetu, Sosa, or Sadic, because he complements all three of them.
Yeah, I would agree with you wholeheartedly. And I think that him anchoring the midfield like that really enabled Sadic to press and to intercept the ball and turn them over. I thought that was a fantastic pairing. And I can't remember who it was in the trap. I'll find it real quick. Mateo. It's where is he at? I'm trying to find it. He said, RIP to the people criticizing Pineda for giving Wiley the start prior to the game, and also RIP to anybody giving Pineda shit this season. Because right now we're on the most points we've ever had through three games. The people that were talking at the gatekeepers talking at the beginning of the season saying he didn't know what he was doing with this team. I thought this was a fantastic selection, mm-hmm. starting 11. Obviously, I want to see Giakoumakis in the starting lineup, but I also know that those things take time to fold him in. And I thought he got it 100% right, and just absolutely battered Charlotte at home, or at their home, to get 3 points. So.
I wonder if it was the jeans and sweater combo that he was wearing rather than the suit. But maybe. I think he dresses down on road games anyway. So,
yeah, maybe so. So, I mean, to that end, he's, you know, we've gone from having no midfield, according to everybody, to him having to choose between three guys to play alongside Ibarra.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, each guy has played well. I mean, so we got a very small sample size. It was nice to see him back on the pitch on Saturday. But Hosetu played well in the first two matches, played really well in the second match. And then Sadic, I thought, played really well against Charlotte, too. And I think we have options, surprisingly.
Absolutely. I think when it was good to see Sosa come on for the last 20, 15 minutes or so, he looked pretty determined. I mean, he seemed to be playing pretty aggressively, which I was really glad to see. I mean, he's probably got a chip on his shoulder. I mean, he was obviously pretty rusty. I mean, there were a few things that he missed on, and I mean, he didn't have the best game, but he, what I liked from him was seeing his energy level. So I'm hopeful for Sosa, but I just worry if something happens to Ibarra, I don't know if Alonso, I don't know, just Alonso's 38. He's almost going to be 39. So, but that's who I see as Ibarra's backup is Alonso now. But then I guess if something happens to Ibarra, then you probably want to look to Sosa or Sadic to replace him before you go to Alonso. But
yeah, I think you're right. I think you could deputize either of those guys in that role for a couple of matches if you need to, or even shift some of your play style and sit guys maybe a little further back on that back line. Or maybe you don't start three behind the... Maybe you start all three of them. Maybe you start Sadic, Hosetu, and Sosa, and then you sit one of the wingers or something like that. But I don't know. Let's hope that we don't have to cross that bridge.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. It's good that Ohosetu had a little tweak in training on his hamstring or whenever it was. And they're like super like, oh, okay, he needs to rest. Don't play him the game. Don't pick him. Don't let him travel. Let's just get him back to where he needs.
So but I saw him driving. So like,
damn.
I don't know if you saw that when I sent that to the Slack. I was coming home from a grocery store. I won't say which one. And I drove past, and there's this really nice car driving past me going the other way. I was like, that really looks like Hosetu. I was like, I don't know. We're like an hour and a half from match time, or you know, from kick. And I get mm-hmm. home, and I was like, oh shit, he's injured. He didn't travel. Where's he going to go watch the game? That's what I wanted to know.
Yeah,
where's he going?
Probably going to a trampoline park or something.
Catch air, or going to like hippo hop, dino dash, something like that.
Altitude, man.
Altitude.
We've graduated. We go to altitude.
Yeah, yeah. We're just now getting into dino dash, so I think it's going to be a little while before we're graduating from that era.
Oh yeah, well, I was at dino dash not so long ago because the little one. I forget I have a 4-year-old as well.
There's like some like death defying stuff for a 19 month old at Dino Dash.
It's like the axe throwing.
Do they have axe throwing there?
Yeah, they. I mean, it's like sponge axes.
Oh, gotcha. But... No, I was talking more like the ropes course that leads to the 30 foot high slide that comes down. Like, anyway.
Oh, yeah. They're fine. They'll figure it out.
Yeah. How long do you think we're going to have Caleb Wiley for? If we have performances like this,
I don't know. He could be gone
left-footed. fast as shit can play. He's basically in the same. I'm not comparing him to Alphonso Davies in terms of quality. I'm just saying, like, same type of player, left-sided, really fast, can seemingly finish in front of goal and can play wing or play wing back.
I would think if he could be the next one to go, because if you get to the summer and you're in a really good position, which of course it's week three, so naturally we know that we'll be in a good position in the summer. He could be the one that ends up leaving because you would want to work something out with Almada, saying, okay, we need to go for this now. We're in a good spot. We could actually make a cup run. So what can we do to keep you here? And then you can go in the winter. So I think Almada would be someone we would keep. But to Clayton Poss's point, not long, but we'll be 10 million richer. Yeah, that kind of feels right if he keeps up and then he's could potentially go in the summer.
Yeah, but you bring up a good point. That's like part of the MLS. It's maybe one of the benefits of the MLS schedule being offset from the rest of the world is that that does happen quite a lot, especially with younger players that aren't going to fit straight into a starting lineup in Europe. Like think about, you know, like Caleb Wiley fit that mold, probably gets the big money move over to, I don't know, Germany or something like that. And he gets loaned back to us essentially until the winter. I'm hopeful that if that does happen, that we at least get him for the rest of the year. I know it sounds crazy. People might think I'm insane for saying that we're going to get offers for him in the summer, but his potential is insane. Mm-hmm. I think he's by far the biggest prospect we've had come through, at least through the academy. And just the fact that he's playing at the level that he is right now, I guess he's still 17, right? He turns 18 in a couple months, but
yeah, he's 18.
Yeah. So,
but I think, now the one advantage we have is if he goes to, we're thinking he's going to go to a top tier league in Europe, right? That's where we're thinking he's going to go. If the offers come in and we pull the trigger. Now, if he goes to a top tier league in Europe, is he going to be starting for like a Dortmund or, I don't know, a Lille in France or someone like that, or a Watford or somebody like that? Or can he benefit from being a starter in MLS? Like which one at that point in time? Because, you know, we've seen with a lot of players who'll go to Europe, then they'll get loaned out to like be a shot in Belgium or something, and then they've got to work their way into the senior team. So
yeah,
could you see, you like a... I mean, you're here, you're playing starting football week in, week out. Is that the move that we want to make?
Or
do you want to wait till winter after we've won
or do you want to be under the tutelage of a squad at Dortmund or something? Not saying he would go to Dortmund, but I mean, on the other side of that, at 19 years old, Alphonso Davies was slotting into the Bayern Munich starting lineup. So
true.
I would say Caleb Wiley's advantage here globally is that side of the field is hard to fill with quality. And it's, you know, left back is a very tall task to fill with a great player. And then having a deadly left winger too. Anyway, I know we're getting way ahead, but we saw it in the first 2 weeks. I think I'm trying to remember who was saying it. I don't know if it was Twelman on the broadcast or somebody that was in the, somebody on Twitter, but saying basically he slowed down a little bit against Charlotte and it greatly benefited him. He wasn't playing as frenetic as, you know, we talked about in the first 2 weeks, but he was everywhere he needed to be. He got on the end, like he finished his chances. It's just an outstanding performance and player of the week performance too.
Yep. Disciplined and mature.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Yeah, it was a hell of a match for him. I feel like everybody. I don't know that there was really a dull spot on the team. Didn't get a ton of Giakoumakis. I felt like.
I don't know what
your impressions were in the second half.
It was good. We didn't see a ton of it. I think he must have been a little bit frustrated that we weren't just going for it. He seemed to be very much wanting to help out the team in whatever way he could. So he was back clearing on defense, as well as trying to get up the field. So that's a really, really promising sign. That's what we saw with Joseph in the first few years. So I think a very positive sign. And I can't wait to see more of the tank. You think he could start next week?
Yeah, I think so. Or this week, right? Saturday
this week,
at home against Portland. Yeah. Yeah, we have the weirdos coming on Saturday. And I say that with endearment, right? Because it's keep Portland weird. Isn't that the slogan?
Oh,
the
motto? Absolutely.
We have them coming in on Saturday. And yeah, I think so. I think that his integration into the squad, I would think that two substitute performances, especially the first one being a full 45 in the second half, second one being more around the 35, because we had, I think, 5 minutes, no, 2 minutes of stoppage. So it's like 33 minutes of playtime that he had on Saturday. I think he's probably, unless I'm missing something, and he's still not up to fitness, I think that we'll see him in the starting lineup. And I think Saturday will be a great time for it, because you're coming off of a great performance against Charlotte. You have your front three or three of your front four that are all firing. Everybody in that front line has scored a goal, with the exception of Miguel Berry and Giakoumakis. Mm-hmm. And I guess you've had two of those guys score braces. Yeah, Almada has a brace and Wiley has a brace. And yeah, you would look to build off of that and have your talismanic striker up there, or like, I guess what we would, who we'd hope to be the.
Absolutely. So. Yeah, but that's the thing. I mean, you say a you say that with such hope, but the thing is that's what kind of we've seen. We've seen it in his highlight tapes. We've seen it in his industriousness on the field that we haven't seen many minutes, but we all kind of get the feeling it's there. So.
Yeah, he has an air of like stardom around him, right? Like, or to mm-hmm. him. I feel like, yeah. Again, we talked about it before. I mean, there's something about a guy who wins the Golden Boot on a relegation side. that's impressive to me. I think that's a great sign.
Mateo in the trap. Thank God Luis has opened his account. Let's hope he comes good this season. I think he will.
Yeah, I think so too. I think he'll put away a few more chances. Trying to see what else we have in here. We have some transfer talk. People asking. We can get to that in a little bit. I wanted to ask you, Dan, what did you think about Elfath's reversal of the penalty call?
I thought it was not. I don't think it should have been a penalty on the original call. I think, was it Zwiderski, the Charlotte player? I think
it was Joswiak, maybe.
Okay. Well, either way, he was shit. Totally whiffed on the ball. And then Lennon was already just moving in that direction to block, because he's bracing to get smashed in the arse with the ball. So
he's backing that ass up. He's doing 1999 Cash Money Millionaires juvenile. Absolutely. Just backing that ass up on
that's what I'd be doing. That's what I'd be doing. And he totally whiffs on the ball. And then it's like, well, I haven't felt any pressure yet. Let's keep going.
So keep going.
and then of course, you know, he backs into the player, and the player just completely whiffs and throws himself on the floor. I mean, it was such a soft PK, so soft. So I was glad when it was reversed.
Yeah, but I guess my question is, what kind of precedent? I don't know. I'm just saying, I felt for Charlotte because I felt like that was done in reverse of what it should have been.
Mm-hmm.
In those situations, oftentimes, and we saw the same thing we see it with offsides all the time, is that you err on the side of caution, don't call it, and then let the VAR decide whether or not for you to have a look at it. That's the only thing I thought was a little weird about it. I totally agree. Not a penalty. It was super soft. I mean, Twelman even was talking about it being soft, but like, he's like, you know, that happened in the middle of the pitch or the middle of the park. You would call a foul on that, which is true, but that sentiment never rings true on the field of play whenever it comes to penalties. Just because it happens in the middle of the field doesn't mean that you can call it in the box because of the impact that it's going to have on the game. You're getting, the referee's going to be a lot more gun shy in calling something that soft. But I thought we were fortunate that they did look at it, and that he didn't. He was able to swallow his pride. And that was promising, I guess, to be able to go and watch that and take the penalty away from them. They were not a good side. They were not a good team. I still get bothered by the but it was Charlotte, so Atlanta United's not back. It's like, is anybody really saying we're back to 2018 form? Like, nobody's really saying that. I think any sentiment about Atlanta United is back is just about us playing exciting and winning games and something for fans to be excited about. Like, I don't think you should be down in the dumps and ragging on other fans for their opinions on whether or not to be happy with how the team is playing.
Well, when they've got assholes in the league who work in the league who are, you know, telling people who can be watching the soccer and who can't be watching the soccer, who shouldn't be watching the soccer.
Oh, Jim Curtin. You know,
just, big assholes like Jim Curtin. So, I mean, what you know, people see that as set as an example and they think it's okay. But yeah, I agree, Jim. People, just give yourself a break. I mean, it was an awesome performance. I mean, we did what we should have done. And I think we will do the same thing to Portland.
Yeah, agreed. And I have a feeling it's the same, but it was San Jose crowd that was out of the first match. And San Jose are on 6 points in the West. So, mm-hmm. I mean, and they're
San Jose are a good side. I think they're a good side. Toronto, ugh, I mean, they're not in the playoffs right now. So, Toronto.
Oh, I mean, they finished seventh last year. They finished above us last year.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah, I mean, just taking it a week at a time. I'm going to enjoy the wins. I'm going to look at the losses, see what we need to do to improve and see where the hope is. But I'm just going to enjoy it. Atlanta United Twitter can be a really dark, toxic place, and I'm not here for that. So I'm just going to take it how I want to take it. And if you want to be a Debbie Downer and spread shit like that, then that's on you. I mean, I can't control what issues that you have that are making you that way. So,
yeah, I like what Patrick Delaney's saying. He says, I've been posting Atlanta is back on all MLS tweets because I am that toxic. And to Burton Boise saying we're winning the fucking league, I agree. And saying getting the we're going to win this league chant started Saturday. Hopefully it catches on.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah. It just goes back to like that negativity seemingly being from some place of superiority, I guess.
Right.
Anyway, I'm going to not subtweet Will Bowron. I'm calling you out, Will Bowron, because in one breath you said, don't tell me Atlanta United's back. And then you start cheering and like you know, beating your chest about beating Charlotte in the next breath. And I know you said don't get it confused, they're not the same thing. I think the sentiment is completely opposite. So I'm just going to be honest there. You're not the only one, though. It's, yeah. So it's, I don't know. I'm really enjoying it. I'm really enjoying, although it's been only three matches, to see people eating crow about what they said about Pineda going into the season. Because what he's been able to get out of this lineup, you know, short of a world-class goal from Bernadeschi on a, you know, a missed, I don't know if you call it a missed assignment or just, you know, giving him too much space in a split second. You know, we would be, I mean, we're still undefeated and we're looking pretty damn good given that we weren't supposed to be in this position.
Yeah. Well, our goal difference has got to be pretty good in the league,
it's,
right?
We've
only given two goals. Four?
Yeah, it's
now,
four.
What's that compared?
Yeah.
I haven't even looked at the overall standings.
Okay, we're going to do this real quick. We're going to go through the league table. We're going to go through the Eastern Conference table, just in case anybody's not aware. Right now in the Eastern Conference, we are sitting tops. And that is because we, alphabetically, we are ahead of Nashville. I don't think I'm kidding, because we have the same amount of wins. We have the same goal differential, same amount of points. I believe it's because we come first in the alphabet. So it's Atlanta.
I think because we've scored more goals than them. I remember that was...
Oh, yeah, you're right.
It's the goal score over the difference.
That's okay. That's right. Yeah, I'm dumb. I should be kept out of... Atlanta United first, 7 points. Nashville second on 7 points. Cincinnati on 7 points as well on third. Only a two goal differential. Inter Miami fourth on 6 points. Philly same. New England same.
Philly have
Orlando
laid three
is...
goals though.
Yeah, that's pretty uncharacteristic, right?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they're. Defense was pretty good last year. They lost Andre Blake today, it looks like.
Yeah, I feel bad for Andre Blake, but Jim Curtin can go fuck himself.
Yes, that is a sentiment we need. So Orlando's on 5 points. They're the first in the list without two wins at seventh. And then the bottom, you have Charlotte. Montreal, surprisingly, is in 14th, Chicago above them, and then Red Bulls, Toronto. Though Toronto has two draws, and Red Bulls are the same way. I think those two teams are going to be better as the season marches forward. NYCFC in 10th, Columbus in 9th, DC in 8th. You know who's first in the league, Dan? And I guess you're probably
first
looking at it right now.
In the league? I do.
Supporters Shield race. Match day three, supporters race. Or supporters shield race.
Would that be St. Louis?
It would be St. Louis.
Man.
They've scored 8 goals. They've scored more goals than anybody else in the league so far. Only 2 of them were on errant back passes. So they still have 6 goals not on errant back passes from the opposing defenders.
Right. But one was a penalty, another one was an own goal. Though the performance against Portland, I think that's been their most cohesive. But I don't know. I am not trusting St. Louis. And I could be eating my words come the summer when they're still undefeated. But I'm not putting any stock in that right now.
Yeah. Clayton Poss, if we want to talk about an actual MLS script, St. Louis is the main character of that script, and that is 100% correct.
Yeah.
And a big German Brazilian guy named Joao Klaus is the main protagonist or antagonist, depending on who you root for in the story.
Win the Supporter Shield and win MLS Cup this year, and then actually just liquidate the following year.
Hey, we beat them. That's like the Miami Marlins playbook, right? 97, I don't know if you follow baseball, but 97 World Series, like just a team of what would end up being probably Hall of Famers or like close to, completely sell the farm in the offseason after winning that. 2003, same exact thing happens. Yeah, you have teams like that, I feel like, where the owners do well strategically, knowing they're not, you know, Miami's a big market, but like in baseball, it's a small market. But yeah, I think you have teams like that. And I feel like that happens with like Colorado. Who else has been like that in MLS? There have been plenty of teams, I feel like, that have won cup that aren't necessarily perennial winners.
Oh, yeah. Colorado, like you say, Real Salt Lake. Chicago, though, they were all that. That was back in the day.
They won, they were good. They won their first year.
Yeah.
The first year of MLS. So in the West, yeah, you have St. Louis in first, and then you have LAFC, who just beat the brakes off of New England last night 4-0. Denny Bouanga scored a penalty, but that would give him, did he either score 3 or 4 during CCL midweek too? So he had either 4 or 5 goals this week. Yeah.
Yeah, LAFC are absolutely killing it. It's so annoying to watch. I know Carlos Vela is an incredible player, and he's every year he's been in the league, I think he's been in the MVP conversation, but I can't stand the guy. I hate his haircuts. Hate that he's kind of good looking. I mean, he's just so good, but he just drives me nuts.
They're a very good team. And they have a very young, good manager in Steve Cherundolo, and a great ownership group. And I hate that they're going to be so good, like every single year in perpetuity. They're like, yeah, I feel like they're the good team, not like in a like an ethical sense or anything like that, or like some sort of like, yeah. But like of LA, like the two teams in LA, I feel like they're going to consistently be the benchmark for the West alongside teams like Seattle and Portland. They definitely were not a flash in the pan. And I think that, again, the ownership group has proven that. And they've just been an outstanding team. Clayton Paws asking if they go for the treble. I forgot we have the treble this year, right? The Nations Cup or Nations League. And four trophies, right?
Yeah.
MLS or Supporter Shield. You have 5 trophies. Supporter Shield, MLS Cup, CCL, US Open Cup, and Nations League. You can win 5 trophies.
Don't they go for the Campione's Cup too? Because they won.
Yeah, I think you're right. So can they win 6? So yes, Clayton Paws, they probably will win a treble out of the 6 that they're eligible for.
Yeah. Mateo, my Grammarly little icon is thank you. And I absolutely think we can be that same level of club for the East. And I totally agree. I think so. I saw something on, was it Twitter or Reddit? Someone was saying like LAFC are the club that has a ton of money but is hitting on all of their big signings. Something that we aspired to but didn't quite do it after 2018. So yeah, it's really impressive. It's really impressive. But yeah, I want us to be that, and then I want us to just bury LAFC when we play them. I think we play them once this year. So that'll be a great game, Daniel, if we're still going.
Do we have a Daniel James? Do we have a download locked and loaded for Portland on Saturday? All right, yep. I don't have a primer for Kevin's too good at that, and I'm not even going to attempt to be along those lines. So there we go. Give it to him, Dan.
Oh yeah, I'm feeling it. This song, All right, now it's
using,
coming up.
Using
now
that term, yeah, using that term a little liberally. It's just a sound. It's just a sound in there.
Sorry, man. Portland Timbers coming to the Benz on Saturday. Big arrival to the Portland Timbers this offseason. Evander, the 24-year-old Brazilian attacking midfielder, brought in for $10 million. Wow. Played in, I think it's Midtjylland in Denmark. in 2021. He had 17 goals, 11 assists in 47 appearances. That is 0.36 goals a game. And in 2022, he had 8 goals, 4 assists in 22 appearances, which also ended at 0.36 goals per game. So he's coming to – so that's pretty good numbers. You know, that's a goal every 3 games or so. That's pretty good for an attacking midfielder. So a lot of hype coming into Portland. However, I know we're only 3 games in, but he has not – I mean, he's got 1 goal against – and that was against LAFC, and it was where he had a ton of space around him. He hasn't really led – to too much build-up. Now, we are early in the season. He played, he started on the bench against St. Louis and then had to get subbed on for an injury. I think it wasn't Williamson. I thought it was. I think it was Paredes. He got injured. And so Evander came on and then was subbed out at the 69th minute. You hate to see someone get subbed on and subbed off again, especially when they've got that large price tag. So not so great start for Evander. He's still got a lot of time, but I honestly think it's the squad is the problem. Portland just seem weak. They're just trying for too much finesse and too much like little dinky passes that always seem to fall like just behind the feet of the person they're trying to get to. And there's just no muscle. Everything just seems weak. The shots seem weak, even though they've scored 1 or 2railing goals, Evander's being one of them. But it just seems like a bunch of kids are playing and they haven't figured out how to strike the ball properly. And not that they haven't been, but just every time it strikes the ball, it just seems like an easy save. So I'm not very high on Portland. And I really like Portland. I love any team that we beat in an MLS Cup final. So I want to look for good things and upsides for them, but they just don't seem to be having any. So they've also had some good scoring opportunities, which they failed to convert. So against Sporting KC, Nice Goda, jumped on a back pass from the defender because the defender was getting pressured by Evander, but then he hit it straight at the keeper. And then also against St. Louis, Moreno had some beautiful technical footwork dancing through the penalty area in the second half and worked his way into some space. And in front of him, he had the whole left half of the goal completely open to him. All he had to do was hit it straight, and it would have been I believe an equalizer at that point, or taken Portland ahead, but he hit it across the goal back towards the keeper and hit it directly at the keeper. So it kind of reminded me of what Charlotte have been doing and just not being lucky. So they have those weird intricacies going for them. I felt bad for this guy because I think he's their best rated defender, Zach McGraw. So Tuoloma left in the offseason and went to Charlotte. So Zach McGraw is kind of like the heir apparent to him, and he's the central piece in their back line. So he's 25. He was drafted from Army, drafted in 2020. He was not really in the squad in 2020. He spent most of 2021 just on the bench. In 2022, he had started getting minutes, and towards the end of the season, he was their starting guy in the center back position. But Zach McGraw has been doing pretty good in the stats. If you look at FB Ref, he's got, you know, he's in the 70th percentile in tackles, 91st in interceptions. He's in 92 in clearances and 92% percentile in aerials won. But it seems like because Portland are just getting pressured, so there's more opportunity for him to have those stats, really. So one pro, I mean, he scored goals. I think he scored 2 goals. Just 1. So it was a header against St. Louis. Problem is, he loves to keep opponents onside. He can get turned around very quickly. He's got really bad positional awareness. And if you've noticed on some of the highlight reels in the goals, he is like standing around totally confused and not running to get defenders. He's always like isolated. He doesn't seem to be marking anyone and just kind of watches the ball get passed by him or watch someone else strike the ball right into the goal. So against LAFC, he was at fault for the first goal, which the corner kick kind of came off of him. He couldn't control it. It was bouncing around. It ended up being, I think it was Cellini that scored. And then against St. Louis, I think it was like the 75th minute, it was 1-1. He made a bad foul right outside the penalty area. And on that free kick, St. Louis won the game. And there was an argument there that McGraw could have been awarded an own goal because he chased the ball into the back of the net and tried to like bicycle kick it out, but he just roofed it into his own net. But I think the ball was already passed. So I am not a fan of Zach McGraw, but if he wants to play against us, which I'm assuming he will, then I really think Atlanta United could feast big on this defense. They'll probably be bunkering a lot more there. They do have some finesse in like Loria. Nezgoda's all right. I've seen a lot of people not saying good things about him online. You've got Marino who plays on the right. And if Evander can find some sort of starting chemistry or willingness to do better, I'm not sure if he's going to be able to get past that. I'm not sure how his mental toughness is because he did not play well against St. Louis, and getting subbed off when you're being subbed on is not great. I think this team is fragile emotionally, and I think Franco Ibarra is going to rule this midfield when they come to Mercedes-Benz. And they have not had good times coming to Atlanta either. So I'm pretty confident about this one. I don't think it's going to be as easy as Charlotte. I don't think Portland are going to score. I think our defense has actually been a complete rock. I think we'll easily be able to shut down their front four with our midfield as well. So I'm going for a relatively comfortable 2-0 win, and we'll see where we go from there. Tim, your thoughts?
3-1 Atlanta. Oof. I think we're getting more comfortable. I think we're getting guys attacking much better. I like the pressure that we're putting on the opposing defenses, and what you said about, see, I don't know that about Zach McGraw, like in that detail. I love it. I like our chances, having guys that absolutely can turn a defender around in Almada, Araujo, and then Giakoumakis too. I feel like, yeah, I like our ability up front, and I think we're going to feast. And to your point, I think our defense has played pretty well. Again, save that, you know, Bernadeschi goal. We're looking pretty solid with two clean sheets. Granted, we're sitting with one. And ifs and buts with candies and nuts, and, you know, we'd all have a Merry Christmas. But the, I like the way it looks going into Saturday. We have some score predictions coming in from the trap. LA Beaven 3-1, Atlanta. Mateo 2-0. Tank gets his first goal for the five stripes. I like it. Who do you think scores for us, Dan?
I mean, I've got to see Yako score a goal. I think he opens his account. I think he can get a brace.
How about a hat trick?
Ooh.
We're not there yet, right? Well, how crazy would Mercedes-Benz be? Rematch from the 2018 Cup in our stadium. New striker.
Oh, I had Cafe Agora earlier today, so I'd be all about it, man.
We get Brittany S 2-1 Atlanta. Anthony Neitzel 2-1 Atlanta. I'm sure his heart hurts saying that. Richard Gordon, 2-0 Atlanta, double G with a brace. I like that. Anything else, Dan?
No, I forget someone in the trap. Portland fans are good folks. So I remember meeting a bunch of them when we beat them in the LA, in the MLS Cup, and they were all real good people. So I think they can be a good bantering between them too.
Mateo saying double G pulls a Ronaldo Cisneros. That's a name I haven't heard all season. Not once have I heard that name brought up. And I completely forgot all about the guy. Club legend, Ronaldo Cisneros.
That's right.
Man. Nathan Explosion, 2-1 Atlanta. Well, thank you guys for tuning in again on this lovely Monday evening and deciding to spend some time with us out of your busy schedule as you wind down and get ready for bed and get ready to get in your car for another commute into the city of Atlanta or wherever you're going.
Yeah, and if you've just got to work, you know, grab a cup of coffee. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. For the fine folks listening and watching, Dan James, where can they find you to interact with you?
You can find me at DNJMS or DMMS.
You can find me on Instagram at Tim Herb. I will be bringing my wares to a market. It's not going to be until May, but I'll be out at Ormwood Park Festival. I found that out the other day. So that should be fun.
Nice, man.
Find us collectively on Twitter at Home Before Dark. That's B and the number 4. If you guys are listening to us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, whatever you want to call it these days, leave us a rating and or review. It really helps us out. We will read whatever review you have for us live on the show the next time we record. Yeah, that's it. That's all you get from us. Have a good night. As always, be home before dark.
Timber!
There it is.